First, let's talk about microplastics. I mean, what are they? How tiny are they? Where do they come from?
Basically, you know, all those plastic items that we use in our life, the bags, the bottles, the caps, the pens, the face washes, plastic has just become this very ubiquitous component of our life that we can't almost imagine life before plastic, although it's a fairly new material. You know, it's only been around since World War II, and yet it's inundated our lives. And when that plastic is released into the environment, whether intentionally or unintentionally, plastic is a very unusual material because it's synthetic, it's purely synthetic, so it doesn't decompose the way, say, a paper bag would. It stays in the environment and it breaks into smaller and smaller pieces, but it maintains its integrity as a piece of plastic. And so a microplastic is considered to be anything less than 5 millimeters, and the majority of the plastics that we're finding in freshwater systems, whether that's Lake Champlain or the Great Lakes, are these even smaller pieces, things that are less than 1 millimeter in size. Imagine a period at the end of a sentence. That's the size of the plastic that we're finding, incredibly small.
When you say released into the environment, though, I mean, I thought this is what recycling was supposed to take care of. I use a plastic bottle, a water bottle or something, I put it in my recycling bin, no problem, right? I mean, how is this getting into the environment?
Well, unfortunately, plastic actually is the material that's least able to be recycled. So you take a glass bottle, you can recycle a glass bottle forever. It never degrades. It's always glass. You take an aluminum can, you can make about, 90% of the next aluminum can. Some of it oxidizes, vaporizes, ended up in the air. Plastic, because of the nature of the material, is actually really, really difficult to recycle. So less than 10% of the plastics that are manufactured every year actually get recycled. Typically, even those that are quote-unquote recycled are really downcycled. So you take a plastic bag and it gets turned in, say, the lining of a jacket. And once that jacket has lived its life, right, it gets a hole in it, where does it end up? And it ends up in a landfill. So about 50% of the plastics that are manufactured every year actually end up in the landfill. About 8 to 10% of them are recycled. But that still leaves, 40% of plastic. Like, well, what happens to it? And it's estimated currently that about 10% of plastics every year actually end up in the water.
What sort of problems do these plastics pose once they get into the water system?
The issue is that eventually they're going to make their way into the food chain. So these small pieces of plastic that look like a period at the end of a sentence, well, they look like food to a fish. Or you also have to think that there are a lot of organisms that live in the water that don't choose what they eat. They just filter feed, mussels and zooplankton. They just filter water through their bodies, and if there's plastic in it, then they end up ingesting that plastic too. And it's not so much the plastic itself, because that's a fairly inert material. It's actually chemicals on the plastic or in the plastic. So as an example, probably the most infamous chemical that's in a plastic is BPA. It got a lot of attention a few years ago because, it's in baby bottles, and they've shown that chemical will leach out of the plastic and end up in infant milk. And then the baby, as the baby is eating, it's drinking basically that BPA with it. And it's an endocrine disruptor. So these plasticizers, these chemicals that are incorporated in the material as it's manufactured in order to allow us to use plastic as a manufacturing material, those chemicals are not chemically bound to the plastic, and so they will leach out of the plastic. In addition to that, as plastic is in the water, chemicals that are in the water will adsorb or stick to the outside of the plastic. And all of these chemicals that we're talking about, they're what we call persistent bioaccumulative toxic compounds. So they're persistent, they'll stay in the environment for very long periods of time. They're bioaccumulative, so they'll move to higher and higher concentrations up the food chain. And they're toxic, so when they're in the food chain, they cause all sorts of reproductive and health problems. And so the concern is that basically the plastic acts as a means to move these chemicals into the food chain, into, fish, zooplankton, up the food chain, and at the top of the food chain is us.
We're eating the fish, and we could possibly be absorbing these toxins.
Exactly.
And the fish themselves, of course, that could hurt them as well. We're talking about declining fish populations, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And declining, I mean, it sounds silly to talk about declining zooplankton populations, and people are like, whatever. But, I mean, zooplankton are the bottom of the food chain. So if the zooplankton die, then the fish that need those zooplankton die, you know, and on up the chain. So you find the plastic everywhere, and then the impact that it has. You know, over 300 different aquatic organisms have been shown, established to be negatively impacted by the plastic that's in the water, and that number is only growing.
Well, given that ubiquity you just talked about, and obviously plastics are everywhere, how in the world can we as a community begin to reduce plastics in the environment?
Well, ultimately, I think it comes down to us thinking about, you know, how does plastic get into our lives, and are there ways that we can reduce it? You know, I mean, it sounds so simple. You know, if you just stop using a plastic bag when you go to the grocery store, that somehow you could be saving the world. But it really is almost that simple, you know, that you find ways that plastic is in your life, and then you find ways to reduce that. And you have to remember that there's 7 billion people on the planet. So it can take actually really small change, but if 7 billion people are doing it, then it can have a very dramatic effect, right? So finding those ways, remembering your reusable bags when you go to the grocery store or the clothing store, not using bottled water, you know, remembering a reusable water container or coffee container when you go to get your morning cup of joe, you know. So thinking of those ways, face wash. So, you know, one thing that's kind of been happening on the microplastics front is the microbeads. So there are face washes, body washes, toothpastes that have these small little beads of plastic in them that are supposed to serve as an abrasive. You know, so doing something as simple as washing your face is contributing to the plastic that's in Lake Champlain. The ones that are the most obvious is when you see those little beads floating in the product. Those are microbeads. You know, if you look at your ingredients, if you see the word polyethylene in your ingredient listing, it has plastic in it, and you want to switch to a different face wash.
Your work has found plastics, as you mentioned, in the Great Lakes. Others have found the same in oceans, and initial data does suggest that Vermont's waterways, including Lake Champlain, may have the same microplastic pollution problem. Is that what you've found to this point?
Yeah, so I've been collaborating with a colleague out in the Lake Champlain area, and when we wash our synthetic clothes, unfortunately, you know, those fleece that we love to wear in the winter, little microfibers flake off of those every time we wash them. They go down the drain, and so we were looking at wastewater treatment plant effluent, and we have found plastic within the wastewater treatment plant effluent going into Lake Champlain. And then just recently, we started looking at these reserves of water from Lake Champlain that have been collected over the last couple decades, and you know, we've only processed a couple of them, but yes, we are finding plastic within that water.
Well, Vermont has been working on legislation to ban microbeads in some beauty products, I think in all beauty products. Do you think
right.
that kind of legislation will have an impact?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and for the record, you know, a couple of companies have come forward and said, you know, Crest has said that by the end of 2015, they're going to pull the microbeads out of their toothpaste. Johnson & Johnson, Unilever have said by 2017, they're going to stop using microbeads. And I'm very supportive of the fact that industry is coming forward and saying, okay, we don't need to use this plastic. We can find something better. I still, though, would like to see the legislation come into play, too, because it really, I think, needs to be a three-prong approach. I think we need to see industry stepping forward. I think we need to see the legislation coming forward. And I think people need to make changes in their life, too.
Sherry Mason is a chemist with the State University of New York at Fredonia. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.